of soil properties using second generation wavelets.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all of you for coming to my presentation. And of course, before starting my presentation, which way is going, I know, but you guys don't know. So I want to thank Dennis to make my work easy. So whatever he told about the scaling things and all other things, I think that will be more easier to talk about my presentation. So if we start with my presentation, as this generation changing, so there is a change in the generation, there's a change in analysis technique. So today I'm going to talk about the second generation wavelet and how we can use that one in analyzing the irregularly sampled soil properties. If we start a little bit the back, means very general sense, like we all know how the soil varies with the location and how the spatial variability information is important in environmental prediction, modeling soil landscape processes, precision agriculture, assessing the soil quality, or managing the soil natural resources. Means the systematic study of the spatial variability started around whatever Dennis was talking around 1972, this last 3.5 decade from this systematic study, we got different issues, like different issue of spatial variability. If we measure two property close together, they are more similar, tended to be more similar than if we measure far apart. So this is assigned as a spatial similarity. And sometimes this similarity repeats in a cyclic pattern or acyclic pattern. So those things is considered as a periodicity. And the different controlling factor for these processes is operating at different scale. So making the whole process or making the spatial variability is a scale dependent. And finally, one thing we are mainly considered about, like the non-stationarity, overlapping of the scales or the trend, spatial trend in the data series, that makes this non-stationarity of the data. Now, how this one works with a quick example, if we take the non-stationarity in soil water storage, soil water storage is controlled by different factors like soil topography, vegetation, climate, groundwater. And the reality is that these factors are not random in the field. Rather, they follow a spatial pattern. This spatial pattern in the controlling factor that represents or reflects in the spatial pattern of the soil water storage. And as these different factors like soil topography, they operate at different scale, making the whole soil water storage series in a non-stationary way. So with a different thing, almost last 1.5 to 2 decades, we are using this wavelet analysis. And from this wavelet analysis, we used to deal with the non-stationarity. How we can do that? Because it partitions the total variation into different scales and location. So when you're looking at the total spatial series, we're zooming into certain portion, because if it is we're not looking into the trend, but at a certain portion, we're zooming in and looking at that. So by that way, we're just partitioning the total variation into scales and location and dealing with the non-stationarity. But there is a restriction. However, Dennis was telling every analysis or everything has a restriction. So this wavelet analysis is restricted to the regular sampling interval, and it needs a certain number of samples, 2 to the power n, like 64 or 128, 512, like that. But in the real situation, what soil scientists do, they are restricted to different situations, like they can't go with a regular sampling interval, or when they are getting a regular measurement, maybe they miss some points because of the big rock or roads coming or water situation. So what do we do? Means how we can do the scaling analysis with this thing? Some other thing that it's not always possible to go for the regular interval. So irregular interval, another problem, and sometimes the insufficient number of the samples. So this wavelet analysis is upgraded to the second generation wavelet, what is called, because it is adaptive. It completely depends on the data. Whatever the mathematical function earlier we were taking, that is fixed for the whole analysis. But this time, it changes its shapes near the edges or near the break gaps and everywhere. So it completely depends on the data set, whatever we have. And another thing means this second generation wavelet is derived from the lifting theory, whatever I'll be coming a little bit in the methodology. So based on this background, we selected our objective to reveal the controls of spatial variability of irregularly sampled soil water storage using second generation wavelet. For this, I worked in Saint Denis National Wildlife Area. It's under Environment Canada and controlled by or maintained by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Oops, no hunting, please, this area. And My site is in the central Canada, central Canadian province, Saskatchewan, and almost in the center of central Saskatchewan position. It's called Centenary National Wildlife Area. And the site is mainly hummocky topography, hummocky rolling topography mixed up that, and in the dry semi-arid climate. So mainly the soils are mollisolic, means aquals to borals, depending on the situation or the location. It's developed on a loamy unsorted glacial till material. I measured the soil water using neutron probe moisture meter up to 140 centimeter depth from 20, 40, 60, 80. And top 10 centimeter, I know there is a restriction for the neutron probe for the surface measurement, so I go through TDR probes of 5, 10, and 15 centimeter to get the surface variability. But those data I'm not considering here. I'm just taking the neutron probe data at every 20 centimeter and calculated total water storage in 140 centimeter. Measured in spring, summer, and fall of 2007 to 2009. Just last week before coming, I completed my 2009 measurement. Now, if we take a look how the spatial series of the soil water storage looks, here the first graph on the top graph is elevation, and bottom graph shows the water storage. X-axis shows the distance along the transect. It is a 128-point transect, and the Y-axis is water storage in centimeter and elevation in meter. So if we look two position here, this was the depression, because whatever I showed the topographic data. So this depression, there's water stagnation in the spring from the snow melt water. So I couldn't, this measurement, so this data set, I missed those data set in my spatial measurement. So there's a one point here also, this frozen point in the April, I couldn't measure. So what I can deal with that? And similar way, if I go to the summer, so there's a regular measurement. And whatever I was showing here in the spring, if we see here the, with the topography, how the soil water storage varies, because Professor Timlin, he already showed how the topographic things affect the water storage and the yield. So in a similar way, if you look, there is a spatial pattern. Like in the null position, we have a low water content, and the depression position, we have a high water content. So that's, in the summer, we also follow the same pattern, but we didn't miss any data, and fall. Though I measured for 3 years, now I'm considering only 1 year data set to show within my presentation here. Now, this data set I analyzed with second generation wavelet, which is based on a lifting theory. If we just quickly go, means how we can do that, is if we have a spatial series of data, we splitted the spatial series into even number of points and the odd number of points. Then what it did, we tried to predict the even number of points based on the odd number of points through the interpolation technique. And this interpolation can be spline interpolation or linear regression on the nearest neighbor. Now, what is the difference? If my interpolation couldn't explain the even number of data points, the variation, the difference in the data variation, that explains the difference in the data point, explains the variation in the pi radian per sampling interval. So that way I'm measuring the variation. And then this predicted value, I uplifted for the next split predicts situation. So next I did for the other thing. So there I'm getting the difference and the averages. This is completely based on a discrete transform situation, like where the scales varies in a geometric progression, like 2, 4, 2, 8, like this, or geometric progression. But for our situation, when we're doing the scaling analysis, if we have a continuously measured scale, that will be better information. That can give us better information. What we did to develop a continuous second generation wavelet, we extended our idea of the linear regression to the local regression. In that local regression, what we did, we calculated the mean of the data point using the locally defined regression weights. And this, so we calculated the difference between every point and put a weight to their situation. Like this weight decays as a smooth function of the distance. If we go far away, our weights is lower to that point. But if we measure close together, weights is more. So there's a special case of local regression which is called Nadera-Watson estimator, where this tau is my point of interest or the location, and S represents the scale. And K is a kernel function which I use exponential to the power of minus x squared by 2. That's kernel function I use, that's a Gaussian kernel function I use throughout my estimation. So this, and K is a means constant, that this Gaussian kernel function that decays, how it decays, or that it explains how it decays with the distance. So based on that, that is a particular S or particular scale we calculated the, calculate that. Now if we just, because as a soil scientist or as a analyst, we need the intersample or intermediate frequencies, not only the particular frequencies. What I did, between the two different scale, I calculated the difference between that school and calculated intermediate frequencies. So that explained as a Gaussian difference of the Gaussian wavelet function. So if you see, there is a little bit of variation in the scales, in this function, because that's the adaptiveness of the second generation wavelet, where we are changing the variation at each location, because this is my irregular data point, so every point we are changing the shape. Now, finally, we go through different discrete data set and continuous data set. We did that. Then we got the final equation. You can explain like this. And where this H tau is, which ensures that the wavelet variance is comparable to all location and scales. And what is the difference between the second generation and the first generation wavelet? Here, what is this H tau is? Is the HS we explained in the first generation wavelet. This H tau is explicitly depends on the sample location. So that's our facility for this second generation wavelet. Now if you calculate the second generation wavelet spectrum, this contour map, my x-axis indicates the location or the transect, and the y-axis indicates the scale. My red color indicates the higher wavelet coefficient, and the blue color indicates the low wavelet coefficient. Now, if we see, if we remember how the topographic pattern was there, a little bit of cyclicity, and if we see around 90 meters, this pattern is showed up here. So there's a different pattern. This variation is cycles over the landscape. And this large-scale variation, we are thinking around more than 250 meters to around 400 meters, that's the overall variation in the landscape, which is maybe due to the groundwater movement, because we measure the groundwater with a piezometer at different situation. So we are thinking maybe due to the groundwater movement or maybe the geological variation, this large scale variation. But this scale variation may be due to the topography. And what I did here, I just calculated the significance level at 95% using the reshuffling method, because this is non-parametric, so I use reshuffling method, created 1,000 surrogate data set and do that. So I get this significance level. This inside this portion is significant, it's 95% significance. Similarly, if we see the summer 2008 measurement, almost a similar pattern at the different scale. And this pattern changes at 90 meter, we have this cyclicity pattern, but at the larger scale, we have the different type of pattern. So this change of pattern with scale, it says me, the soil water storage is scale dependent. And with time, there's the pattern similarity or the stability of the pattern with time. Similarly, if you see the fall 2008, this pattern is almost stable over time. So there's a time-independent spatial pattern. We are getting it here. Now if we see, beside the soil water storage, like second-generation wavelet, we do the topography or the elevation situation. We have this cyclicity represented here in the red color in a cyclic pattern. So this is similar to our soil water storage series, indicating that elevation has good control on the soil water storage because of the similar pattern. In the reverse way, if you see the soil texture or the sand material, I just contain that because I have some other thing, but I didn't show it here. This is not similar to our variation in the soil water storage. So which this indicates, now if we just conclude this situation, like the spatial pattern soil water storage is scale dependent because I showed you how it's changing with the scale, and this spatial pattern is the time independent. So are stable over time. And the second thing, if we say topography controls the soil water, because there's so much similarity in the spatial pattern of topography and the soil water storage. So topography controls the soil water storage irrespective of the time. Because we measured three different, all season, over 3 years, and I ran all data set, it's showing me the similar pattern. So there's a time independent pattern in the soil water storage, and texture has a very little control on the soil water storage at any time. Because those have a very big scale. I know this is a little bit contradictory to the literature, whatever we have, because in literature says that with change of time, the control is changing. We're saying the factors is not completely changing, but their magnitude is changing. Where the elevation is control, is a major control over time, but texture is a control, but the magnitude is changing over time. It's not completely turned out of this situation. And finally, the second generation wavelet, we can better analyze our irregularly sampled data set with this. Before finishing up, I want to acknowledge, of course, the smiley face who helped me a lot in this field. Means that's almost 3 days measurement continuous for 3 years. So he's Henry Chow, and different funding opportunities like Dean Scholarship for my study support from University of Saskatchewan and NSAC Canada. So for this project supporting. And any question, please?
Yes, sir.
Wavelet analysis was the one I forgot. That was a another good application in doing this kind of spatial analysis. And I was wondering, in your original graph, you showed that aspect had a connection with the water content as well. And did you look at aspect? Is that something you could include in the analysis?
Yeah, we are doing, that's a very good question, because not only the topography, there is a different topographic indices, whatever Professor Timlin was telling about. I'm just working on that. I got some of this aspect data, curvature data, and the interflow or water flow data. All these things, not only the elevation, but only different situation or different type of topographic indices I'm working on. So it'll take a little bit of time in my program, but I'm working on that.
Do you still depend on one basic wavelet shape? So like in earlier work, so for example, the modeled wavelet, or I think you used that Gaussian.
Yeah.
So is that the general underlying shape that you are assuming, or is that flexible?
We are still using one shape, but that one changes with time, because when I calculated this Gaussian, difference of the Gaussian or the dog wavelets, I showed you there is a change in the shape. Though we are assuming, they are taking out the main shape, but it changes with the situation. Like when you are transferring that inter-frequency or intermediate frequencies, every frequency is calculated based on the situation, whatever we have in the data. So if we have a breakdown of this point, suddenly we are missing data. So this position, this one is or adapts its shape. So this is by adapting its shape, so it calculates, it considers this irregularity.
So that's a better way to handle missing data than using a traditional wavelet analysis.
Yeah, traditional wavelet we can't go through, because if we have a regular interval and if we need 128 minimum or 256 or 512, but in this case we can deal with less number of data points, and similarly the irregular sample of data points.
How about the length? Does the length of the sample have to be the same?
Length, it can be the lower number of samples, like whatever I was taking 128 point. Now I am thinking to do this one as a completely irregularly sample, because we are based on this regression weight. So if we have a maybe complete sparse sample, so in that case this regression weight will be affecting. So I'm not sure, we are working on that. Probably will be coming out something.
Well, let's end with our speaker again.
Thank you.
And let's move on to Andre's presentation, Dr. Andre Guber.